This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your workday. So tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
You're on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca, my special co-host today is Senator Dean Smith. And our next guest, and I've really been gagging to have a chat with you, Nicholas. Nicholas Koppel, Adjunct Associate Professor at Monash Uni, but prior to that, Australia's Ambassador to Myanmar 2015 to 2018. Welcome to Joy and welcome to Victorian Pride Centre.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
It's a great pleasure to have you here. Now, I know Dean is... He goes gaga about Myanmar, about everything related to it, although we both have to excuse ourselves because often we refer to it as Burma. Mm. Just so you know, Nicholas, my father fought in Burma in the Second World War, as did Paul's father. My father was taken prisoner by the Japanese.
Wow.
And my father had an abiding affection for the Burmese people because of the help and food that they provided to him surreptitiously at risk of their lives as a prisoner of war.
Mm. Was he working on the railway?
Yes.
Wow.
Australia owes a debt to the Burmese people, and it's time that we started, I think, supporting them. And dare I say it, it's time the Australian government, we've muscled up to China, it's time we muscled up to those thugs in ill-fitting uniforms in Burma. That's my opening statement. Dean... And Nicholas, go for it.
Well, Macca, I thought I might just give the listeners some context. So since 2012, I've had the opportunity to visit Burma, Myanmar, on five occasions. One of those was to observe the elections as an official observer on behalf of the Australian government and numerous private visits as well. And, of course, on some of those visits, Nicholas was actually the Australian ambassador to Myanmar. And I think for those that are listening, they can have great pride in the quality of our representation overseas, and I just wanted to publicly acknowledge the great work that I was able to witness you doing in Myanmar, Nicholas, and I wouldn't mind just touching a bit on the LGBTI awareness work that you were doing and some of the observations. But of course, the matter before us is the consequences of the military coup, and you know, the Australian government has crafted a response. And feel free to provide to us now just a brief critique from your professional experience, what you think about that response and how it can be enhanced or improved.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks for that lovely introduction as well. Well, the situation in Myanmar, I mean, they had the coup was in February of this year, February the 1st, so it's 6 months ago almost to the day. Mm. And in that time, the protests from the people, I mean, it must go back, this coup followed elections which were held in November last year. There then is a period of time before a government is sworn in, and that government was due to be sworn in on the 1st of February. So the coup took place to prevent that swearing in of the government, which is the government of Aung San Suu Kyi and her party, the National League for Democracy. They won an overwhelming majority. It's over 80% of the seats that were contested. So unambiguous voice of the people is that they wanted the National League for Democracy to be in charge of the civilian side of government. The generals, particularly the general, the senior general, this guy called Ming Aung Hlaing, refused to accept that outcome and staged a coup on the day that the government was supposed to be sworn in. At first, the people objected to this through a protest which involved, you know, beating of pots and pans, synchronized beating of pots and pans in almost like an Olympic sport at 8 p.m.
I have participated in the beating of pots and pans on the steps of WA Parliament, yep, with the Burmese community. Yep.
And then, of course, that didn't bring about any change, and people got more and more frustrated and started taking to protests on the street. And it wasn't long. It was only a matter of weeks before the military authorities started to crack down on this. It began with rubber bullets, but again, it wasn't long before live ammunition was used, and we had cases of people being shot in the back of the head. Snipers were being used.
The violence is real.
And it escalated, and we now have close to 1,000 people who have been killed. And no sign of backing down whatsoever from the military. And
I think this is an important point when we get to sort of, the Australian government's response and whether or not it can be, more strident.
Indeed. But I think in terms of working out, what is the best way for the government to respond, we need to sort of have a fairly good understanding of what's happening on the ground and who we're dealing with. And as you say, we have a military who are indifferent to the wishes of the people of Myanmar. I mean, they spoke unambiguously in their elections. They spoke unambiguously on the streets. They're prepared to risk their lives. And yet the military refuses to listen. Now, is it more likely to be listening to statements that come out of foreign governments than it is to its own people? Unlikely. But I would argue, and as do many others, that doesn't mean that whatever we say or whatever we do is without purpose. There are multiple purposes in making statements. And, one of them is, of course, the hope that if there's a chorus, an international chorus against this, that, they will listen. But that's, that's, if you like, the best possible outcome and an unlikely one. But there also is a statement of what it is that we believe in. What is it that we stand for? Are we prepared to speak out when we see something that's wrong? Or do we just turn a blind eye to
it? An expression of Australian values in our foreign policy.
Absolutely. And it's also a statement which goes to the people of Myanmar who are protesting that, we're with you.
And their families that are living in Australia.
And the families living to Australia.
And in other countries.
Of course, a statement that it's terrible and what's happening should stop is not going to bring about change in itself. But that doesn't make it an unnecessary statement.
I wonder if I can ask, having been the ambassador and understanding how diplomacy works, a word that some people might say is not in my spell check, but, the public statements by, foreign ministers, wherever they are, to the leadership in Myanmar, I understand, how that language works. But in private, when a diplomat meets with the military, the junta, how strong is the language, or does that diplomatic, I call it double talk, continue? Is the language strong? As an ambassador, if I might ask, were you ever able to say, hey guys, blah, 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 this is what we really think as a government. We're not saying that publicly. Does that happen? Please tell me it does.
Well, the way I would put it is that the message is strong.
Okay.
It has to be unambiguous. There's no point sugarcoating a message to the point where it's not clear what it is you're saying. So the message must always be clear. But at the same time, you need to be polite and respectful. I mean, you're there as the representative of another country. In a sense, you're a guest in their country, and they... If it's the leader to whom you're speaking, or a minister in a government, or indeed if it's just simply the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, I mean, they're at the peak of their
power
and at the peak of their organisation. And, you treat them with civility. But at the same time, the message must be clear. Otherwise, it's not getting through.
People tell me I wouldn't be a good diplomat. I know you'd find that hard to believe.
Nicholas, what is the threat and prospect of civil war? Because of course, a civil war will have humanitarian consequences, significant, very significant, and that could put pressure on not just our humanitarian aid budget, but pressure on what we might seek to do to give people safe haven.
I think there's a real prospect of. I mean, there's. Some number of the ethnic minorities have their own so-called ethnic armed groups, and they've been in conflict with the central authorities in Myanmar for decades. Many of those will continue. I'm sceptical that they would unify into a national force to overthrow the military junta, But we're also seeing a number of citizens, individuals, particularly a younger generation, who are travelling to these ethnic areas and getting training in the use of firearms and the use of explosives, and then coming back to the urban areas, particularly Yangon and Mandalay, but other urban areas as well, and targeting individuals in the junta with roadside bombings or in assassinations and so on. That's a little bit short of a civil war. I wouldn't call it a civil war, but I do think it's a level of violence in a protest movement which we haven't seen before.
And it's in Myanmar. You know, my understanding of the people of Myanmar, this is not something that really fits their psyche. You know, that we've seen groups in the countryside and otherwhere taking up arms, and you know, the level of protest and resistance, certainly the resistance and the protest, but this sort of potential for armed struggle against the military dictatorships, that seems to me not something that they really want to do or have experience with.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
The ethnic minorities have been doing it for decades.
Yes.
You know, in varying levels, depending on their situation. But it's the yes comes more in terms of the Bama, which is the majority ethnic group. They haven't been taking up arms against their own government in the past. There have been significant protest movements, you know, following previous coups, you know, whether it be 1988 or the Saffron Revolution. But they've been very much, as you say, peaceful expressions of protest, and very much led by Aung San Suu Kyi, and she's got more this Gandhi-esque approach to protest. She, at the moment, is under
house arrest
and incommunicado.
Yeah.
Now, it'd be wonderful to know what she would be thinking of all the violence that's going on at the moment. Mm. She might not approve of what the people... But there's a new generation, not prepared to wait.
I hope that the majority of the people in Burma, now that they're being oppressed very brutally by the military, understand how the Rohingya felt. And, you know, that perhaps there might be a coming together there. I know that's a really complex issue. But, you know, Burma will come out of this if the people are united in a common cause about democracy and equity. They won't come out of this well if they topple the junta and they continue in the way they have in the past against minorities in their own country.
I agree.
Good.
We'll see if it happens.
Yes. Dean, please.
Just before we wind up, Nicholas, your experience in raising LGBT awareness in countries like Myanmar and others, and, how perhaps as a prosperous Western nation, we need to approach these things perhaps more sensitively or with a greater focus on, I think the word you used was an indigenous approach, an approach that sort of aligns with, or better aligns with sort of cultural values and those sorts of things. Any observations you can share with listeners?
Yes, it's Myanmar has is actually a colonial era law, you know, the Penal Code of 1861. So this law has been on the books for 120 years. And section 377 of this law prohibits acts which go against the laws of nature, or words to that effect. It's a difficult one to repeal because it's a law which is also used to bring charges against pedophiles. So you can't simply strike it off the books. It needs to be rewritten, redrafted, obviously to exclude same-sex activities. But in Myanmar, when gay rights or LGBTI rights are raised, it's often seen as a Western agenda. And that it's not an issue for Myanmar, and you know this behaviour doesn't exist. It's, if you like, it's a Western disease. So in tackling this legislation, it isn't. I think those from the rest of the world who wish to support the move for change, as we do, need to be supporting local voices. It has to be seen, and it has to be a change that comes from within Myanmar, it's not something which is being driven by, you know, Western liberal democracies. And so that then comes to, well, how can you know, us as a country, me as the Australian ambassador, support such a move. And there are a number of ways. I mean, the local community has local organisations. They need funding. They're very well run, and they're, you know, got terrific people. So it's not about needing, you know, some foreigner to come in and lead them. It's about providing some resourcing support. They have, you know, for example, every year a LGBTI film festival, and we have participated in that. We had a terrific film, a short film, which from a school student in Sydney called The Language of Love, a guy called Kim Ho. It's a terrific, one of the best, you know, there's so many gay short films.
Yes.
And not all of them are very good, I must say. But this one is absolutely beautiful. And we're very pleased that it was shown as part of this film festival.
Well, we look forward to opening the Yangon Pride Centre in years to come, generously funded by Australia's foreign aid budget.
Yeah. That would be terrific.
Yeah, we're going to get Dean drug tested after that. Look, thank you so much, Nicholas. Opening the window to us a bit, to understanding a little bit the situation there, I admire people that diplomacy is their trade. I always watch it with great interest, with me screaming at the television. But it does, you know, I understand how it works. It just means that it's a job that's denied me. So thank you, and you're very welcome anytime. You want to come on, Joy, and speak about this issue and other issues, you're always very welcome.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure to be here. I'm happy to come back.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.